Tesla slashes prices, roaches in your PS4, New York might make Uber add a tipping option, and how driverless cars are learning from Grand Theft Auto. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1748, recorded Monday, April 17th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you everything you need to know about technology. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. How are you doing, Megan?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Yeah, can't complain. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to talk some tech news.
Okay, let's do it. Over the weekend, a man posted a minute-long video of himself murdering Robert Goodwin Sr., who appeared to have no relation to the murderer. The video was not posted on Facebook Live, as some have reported, but just posted to Facebook, where it remained for hours before being taken down. They disabled the suspect's account within 23 minutes of receiving the first report. That report did not come in for some time. In a statement to journalists, a representative from Facebook says the company is working hard to keep a safe environment on Facebook, but they know they need to do better. So the suspect claimed to have also killed 15 other people, but there's no proof of that. That has not been substantiated. Right. The video, of course, can still be found on the web, as we know. Things do not disappear from the internet. It's really raising a lot of questions. It's upsetting. Questions about what Facebook could have done differently. I mean, one of the most upsetting things I read today is one of the reasons they had a hard time finding, like, just determining it, with why it took so long, is there's just not that many lives, you know, there's not that many videos of people murdering people, I guess, you know, things that ain't live. It wasn't on Facebook Live, but just that video. Whereas, like, there's lots of pornography, so it's easy to find pornography and get it off quickly. But this, which is depressing when you think about it, we don't want more of it so that you can feed more to the AI. But it's also raising questions about whether people who see it, what's their responsibility to report it?
Absolutely. I think that's a really big part of this, right? Facebook posted a timeline and they basically said, so there were three parts to this. They said the first part of this was the shooter publishing a video saying that he intended to kill someone. Second video published is the video that, you know, of course, everybody that has been in the news for the past couple of days, of him actually murdering Robert Goodwin Sr. And then the third was actually him going live, essentially confessing to it and, you know, saying a whole lot of other information, including, you know, alluding to having killed 15 people and all that kind of stuff. Through that timeline, they said their first report from a viewer did not come in until an hour and 45 minutes after the second video had published. So, and I, you know, they don't release information as far as how many views or how many people had actually viewed that video by that time. But I mean, that's a really big challenge, right? If their AI can't catch it, or like, how does their AI know? Like, what? I just don't understand how an AI could look at that and really know with confidence that it could flag it. But hey, AI does a lot of really amazing things these days. And then reports about the third video, which was the live portion, only began to come in after it finished. And that was the broadcast where he actually admitted to murdering someone in the previous video and saying a whole lot of other very questionable, very scary things. It's heartbreaking that mm-hmm. this happens, and the real challenge here, beyond Facebook's tools and how they deal with this, because I think any platform like Facebook, YouTube, I mean, they're forced to deal with this by the very nature of the fact that their service is built around the idea that you can quickly put something up on the web. It's next to impossible to police that immediately. So it's going to exist for a short period of time before it's caught, probably, and detected. But once it's out there, right? Like, even though Facebook has removed this, it's still floating around there. It's still easy to find. And as that surfaces up, victims, like the victim's family, You know, I mean, it's like a constant reminder of just how horrific that scenario was.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of news floating around. I mean, as we're recording this, they haven't found him yet.
So
there's a lot of like people posting on media, on social media. He's going this way. He's going that way. It's very confusing. It's making the job harder for law enforcement. There's also already the Daily Dot reports that there are several unauthorized GoFundMe campaigns launching in the name of the victim. So be wary before you donate. I think there are. I think I read somewhere on Facebook, I think they do have a link to an official place that, you know, if you feel like you need to donate. But, you know, so the scams are already popping up. So,
yeah, well, actually, GoFundMe. So I found a representative on one of the articles that I read had kind of talked a little bit about that. They said, quote, as with any event, there may be multiple people who want to help, whether they're helping or not. I'll go ahead and put that in air quotes. It's important to remember that our platform is backed by the GoFundMe guarantee, which means funds are guaranteed to go to the right place. So somewhere along the line, even if these things are created to take money in the name of so-and-so, I'm guessing that from what I understand, that means that GoFundMe is involved to the point to where they have to clear and clarify where that money is actually going before it's released to the person who created the GoFundMe account. So I guess in essence, that would mean that whether these were legitimate or not, if there's money actually going there in that name, in the name of this incident, it would make its way to the right place.
Huh. I didn't know there was a GoFundMe guarantee.
Neither did I, but there you go. Yeah. And that's a pretty solid, I mean, that's a pretty great guarantee to have for a service like this. I mean, I imagine they have to have that. Otherwise, GoFundMe would just be used all the time for taking advantage of people in the name of something major like this. So Russia's Federal Anti-Monopoly Service, or FAS, struck an agreement with Google in an antitrust case from 2015 where Russian search engine Yandex charged that Google was violating competition rules and how Android devices are preloaded with Google's Play Store app as well as Google services. That's, of course, on legitimate Android devices sold in the country. The ruling imposes a fine of $7.8 million that Google must pay, and that accounts to 9% of Google's Russian revenue from 2014 plus inflation. Not that much when you're talking about Google, you know, and their crazy, you know, the crazy amount of money that they make on a daily basis. Possibly more damaging, however, are new rules that will require Google to loosen its exclusivity placement of its apps on Android devices, including allowing users to select a competing search engine during setup. And doesn't that sound familiar from, like, I think it was a decade ago when Microsoft had a similar antitrust ruling and they had to make it so that when you install a version of Windows, you select which search engine is embedded into it. Before that, it was just assumed that it would be Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm. I was buying some furniture this weekend and the guy at the store was using Internet Explorer. I was like, really? Who still uses Internet Explorer? But some people do.
Yep.
So yeah, 9.7 million. Is that how much it was? 7.8 million. I don't know where I came up with 9.7 million. But that seems like a lot for you or I. But
Google,
it's really not. But, you know, I mean, as you said, the big deal is they won't get app exclusivity anymore. And Yandex commands over 60% of search in Russia. They're big. But I guess they you know, their reach was being reduced by this, by Android.
Well, they certainly felt so. Mm-hmm. You know, if there are a large number of Android devices being sold in the country and by default, and under Google's rules, the GMS rules, which is Google Market Suite rules, it's a certification that anyone that wants any of Google's official apps on a device, they have to meet certain requirements as far as like what kinds of devices they produce. If they want to meet this certification and have all of Google Suite, you know, Duo, Gmail, Calendar, News, the Play Store, all of those on there, they have to kind of, to a certain degree, guarantee that their devices will not have competing services on. It's kind of like, well, if you want to play in Google's version of Android, which is the GMS side of things, you have to agree to the requirements of the, it's called the MATA, the Mobile Application Distribution Agreement. And, you know, our apps can be on there, which is great for you because people want those apps. But it's bad for you if you have a competing service that you want to load on there. You can't. Otherwise, you're breaking the rules and you can't install those apps, period. So this is a big change. This is a big change for how Android has been working. This is just in Russia. I saw someone in chat room asking if this is for everywhere or just Russia. In this case, it's just in Russia. But There's a case, there's a very similar case happening in Europe right now. So this could be some sort of a precedent for how this happens in other markets where antitrust is a question.
Well, Tesla just slashed prices on its Model S. The 75 kilowatt hour version will get a price cut of $7,500, which means it will start at $69,500, which is still $1,500 more than the price of the previous entry-level Model S Tesla that is now discontinued. The company will stop selling the 60 kilowatt hour version as stock has run out. The Model X also got a little discount, so it now starts at $82,500. We still don't know what the official price of the Model 3 is. That'll come out in July. The company says it's going to start around $35,000. Does this make you want to run out and get any of these SX3 anything?
I mean, I would want to get a Tesla, absolutely, but it still doesn't make it possible for me to get one. This certainly, like, it seems to me what this is this is adjusting the prices because now they're about to have the Model 3's right around the corner, and it's priced a lot lower. But they need to kind of like balance the features and services that are available at these different price points so that they still have leverage to upgrade to the higher up vehicles. And if you're thinking about a Model 3, all you have to pay is this, you know, this amount extra, and that'll bump you up to the S or whatever the next step is, and to incentivize people to not just have everybody locked into the 3 because it's the low cost one. I mean, you know, there's lower capacity for their batteries on the less expensive ones versus the more expensive ones. So create this little ladder of stepping, you know, mm-hmm. ways to get to their higher priced vehicles.
A Tesla at every price point, except for those of us who don't want to even pay $35,000 for a car.
I know, right? I would love to have one though. Like they're also making big changes to unlocking, as we've talked on the show in the past about opening up battery capacity. Like your Tesla is capable of a certain amount of battery capacity, but it's throttled based on what level you've bought it at, and you can unlock that. Prior to these changes, the 90D used to cost $9,000 to get full battery capacity. Now that's just $2,000. So they're lowering that barrier. With the S70 used to cost $3,500 to have that full capacity. Now that's pushed down to $500. So they're kind of tweaking with things to figure out how they can better upsell you.
Mm-hmm. And if you've already bought the Model S, there's no cashback program, sadly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're going to get one, right? Totally.
No, my $13,000 Prius from 2012 is perfect.
Excellent. Maybe in the next iteration of
maybe.
Tesla vehicles.
Yes.
When they put out a $15,000 or $20,000 vehicle. Mm-hmm. Not sure I see that happening anytime soon. You may have a Roach Hotel living underneath your TV and you never even knew it, did
Gross.
You?
Gross.
Apparently the Sony PS4 is attractive to those cute little troublemakers. Kotaku says that the PS4's roach problem is well known to independent console repair shops, causing some places to charge an extra $25 roach fee for dealing with them. The PS4 ventilation grates are wide enough that roaches can slide in easily, and once they're inside, there's enough enclosed open space and then of course warmth provided by the electronics to facilitate some award-winning roach nesting action. And these people are apparently freaking out because roaches! There's a roach right there! Ah! Oh, ooh, just gave me the willies.
I thought we had a no roach story policy on this show.
Nope.
You
thought wrong.
I take some issue with you calling them cute and award winning.
All for effect.
I grew up in Houston, Texas, where it was very humid, and no matter what you did, they just pop out at you. Oh. And I have a little bit of PTSD from that.
It just makes my skin crawl.
A big ones, right? It's true. Burke. big roaches. Not, I mean, the big flying kind. That's why we're so tough. If we grew up in Texas, now you know why, as opposed to Idaho.
Where I can't stop shaking just thinking about it.
Xbox One, not immune.
Also
a problem. If you are struggling with this serious problem, I read some solutions. Some people said to stick it in the freezer, but other people said that would ruin it, the Xbox. They said you could spray canned air into it, just shoot them out.
I mean, but no matter what, they're like... They're in there.
Well, that's why you do the canned air. You shoot them out.
But there's a lot of space in there. Yeah, like maybe that would work, but you'd never really know. So apparently the reason why people's machines are breaking down and they don't know.
Stop it.
Yeah. Oh, well, these are just dancing dancing cockroaches. It's fine. Their consoles stop working. And they're like, I don't understand why. So they take it into the shop. What happens is the electronics on the inside basically melt the cockroaches and they end up fusing the console from the inside. Burke says, keep a house clean, problem solved.
That's not
but
true.
That's not always true.
You grew up in Houston. Well, I kept it clean. What are you saying about me? That's rude, Burke.
Sometimes they're just there. It's, you know, hot and humid climate and whatever. Also, consoles are left inside a closed door cabinet often with low air circulation, low to the ground. So they're saying lift it up, keep it out in the open. But I loved this quote. One shop in Manhattan and the story from Kotaku was quoted in the article as saying, you see those bags, black garbage bags and heaps in the corner of the room? Those bags are full of roaches. Like it's just a thing. They clean out these consoles and they have bags upon bags of roaches.
Okay, well, I don't understand because there's lots of things that we keep in our house that have little, like that have roach-sized. Right? I mean, like, why aren't they climbing into DVD players or...
Well, but DVD... Well...
Because there aren't that many DVD players anymore.
Well, and I mean, part of this is that it's the PS4, not the PS4 Slim, so there's more open space on the inside. When I think of DVD players, I think of a tight, compact little... Maybe there are other things where cockroaches climb in, but it's also the fact that, at least per this article, the vent grating areas are easy for them to slide into. Like, mm-hmm. they fit... Mm-hmm. in there. Burke is standing firm on his assertion that a clean house means no roaches.
I thought you were with me. He grew up in Texas too. I don't know. He's a claim. I mean, he's basically saying so nice things about me and my family and our cleanliness. And
can we move on to the next story?
Okay. A report in today's New York Times says the city of New York wants to force Uber to put an option to tip inside its app. Currently, you can tip your Uber driver with cash, but this is not advertised. Other ride-hailing apps like Lyft let you tip within the app, and now the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission has put forth a proposal requiring car services that only take credit cards to allow riders to tip in the app. The local regulator says they're responding to a petition presented in February by a non-union group that represents Uber drivers and other professional drivers in New York. I think this is a wonderful idea. In the beginning, Uber implied that the tip was included. That if you talk to a lot of people, that was sort of, you know, oh, well, you don't tip because the tip is included, but they had a class action lawsuit and that is not true. So I think, I think that I'm glad that they're doing this. The petition received 11,000 signatures, and an Uber spokesperson told the New York Times that they will review the proposal.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first step. It still requires a public hearing where they're going to get feedback from the community, and I'm assuming from drivers and those who would be paying the tips potentially, and then a vote to implement or reject it. Like you said, Uber's really kind of pushed back on implementing some sort of a formal tipping process. They've been caught not actually applying tipping, even though they said it was built into the price. And, you know, so that's kind of a black eye there. There are a lot of riders that see Uber's lack of a tipping requirement as kind of a liberation of sorts from the tipping economy. And like, well, this is the service that I can use where I don't feel pressure to tip. However, a lot of the riders, you know, the Uber drivers rather, are looking for ways to improve the money that they're making. And tipping is definitely one way to do it, and certainly worked for Lyft. And I'm personally used to that, but I know that there are a lot of people that are very opposed to that that economy, whatever, the tipping economy. So it'll go back and forth, I suppose. Oh, you really had to do that, Brian. Burke,
just saying,
clean up your room.
Yeah, keep it clean over there.
Keep it clean over there. Your laptop is infestation of cockroaches.
Gross, Burke. Gross.
Yes. Sometimes you eat a sandwich over there. Yeah, we know. Up next, We'll chat with Katie Benner from the New York Times about the tough road ahead for Airbnb. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. Going through the mortgage approval process or even just securing a mortgage in general, it comes with a lot of hurdles because you've got to find all this information. You've got to do a lot of things in real life. And we're so used to living our lives online in the digital realm. So it'd be nice to kind of manage all of that stuff online with someone that you trust. And when it comes to that big decision of actually choosing someone that you can work with, a mortgage lender, you want to work with someone who you can trust, who has your best interest in mind. And with Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you won't waste time searching through real stacks of paperwork in the corner of your office. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's perfect for you. So you can kind of play around with the numbers and see where you end up. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. Airbnb has emerged as a major threat to the hotel industry. And big surprise, the hotel industry is trying to do something about that. Joining us to discuss this story is Katie Benner from the New York Times. How's it going, Katie?
Great. How are you?
Awesome. It's great to have you back here. Thank you for joining us tonight. So first of all, how big of a threat would you say Airbnb's model is to the longstanding tradition of how hotel bookings have been managed so far?
So it's a little bit complicated, and I'll break it down as simply as possible. So the hotel industry works just like the airline industry and many others, and that when times are busiest, they can charge more money. So if you want to fly on Thanksgiving, you will pay a lot more money than if you fly some other day of the year. And if you want to stay in New York City during New Year's Eve when things are really busy, or in San Francisco during, big Salesforce conference, you will pay a lot more money for your hotel. So what Airbnb does is it adds supply in almost every market that it's in, especially major cities where things like conventions and enormous celebrations happen. And because there's more supply, the pricing comes down. Now, that's something that all hotel executives have sort of mentioned on their earnings calls, though they try to downplay it. The thing is that on those nights when there is what they call compression, that is when the industry makes a significant amount of its profits. Those are its most profitable nights, and those are the nights where, those nights sort of expand across the year to make the industry profitable. So when that is threatened, that does actually threaten profitability for the industry overall. And that is how Airbnb sort of chips away at how much money the industry can make, even if it's not taking away huge amounts of, even if it's not cannibalizing huge amounts of rooms from hotels.
Yeah, it can offer a small amount of rooms, but that actually ends up being a lot of money lost on the hotel side because they get so much more for those rooms that they're losing access to. Now, the New York Times obtained some documents that show how the American Hotel and Lodging Association is attempting to slow down Airbnb's progress. What do those documents reveal exactly in this case?
So what they reveal is an interesting multi-pronged legal approach to Airbnb. What they're doing mostly, there are other things too, but the bulk of it is to work with state and local regulators as well as attorneys general all across the country to show where Airbnb hosts are either breaking the law or in a really legal gray area to try to get hosts off of the site. I think New York City is probably the best example. Governor Cuomo passed a law imposing very, very steep fines on people who break the law in New York City. Now, I think there's no defending people who are breaking local law. I think that that's actually, totally justifiable to fine and punish people who are doing that. But the steepness of but that has always been illegal, and everybody broke the law. They didn't take it seriously, and there were tons and tons of hosts on Airbnb because there's no real punishment. Now there's a real punishment, and it has curbed the number of hosts on Airbnb, and the fewer hosts, that means less supply on the market, which is better for the hotels. Now, they're not doing anything wrong. They're not doing anything. Trying to get local government to enforce existing local law is not necessarily wrong, but it is, a big part of their attack on Airbnb. And then in other other places, they're trying to highlight where Airbnb has not served the community or is competing unfairly against hotels, especially when it comes to things like taxes. You don't have to pay if you rent a room on Airbnb. In some markets, you don't have to pay lodging taxes. But if you go to Marriott anywhere in the country, Marriott is going to collect from you, the user, a lodging tax that goes to local government. So they're trying to highlight those differences as well. And then the third piece is try to emphasize the number of professional commercial operators that exist on Airbnb. Airbnb's narrative is, we're helping mom and pop. We're helping like a single mom with two kids make ends meet by renting out a room in her house. The hotels industry's narrative is, while those people do exist on Airbnb, it is mostly people who are professionally renting out three or more units and making a lot of money. And that's all, those are also the people who generate the most money for Airbnb.
So is that true with the hotel, what the hotels are saying? Like, is it mostly the people that have just, they own three houses in San Francisco that they never live in and they just rent them out as Airbnbs? Or are there, is there a larger percentage of people that, you know, really do rent out a room on Airbnb in order to afford to live in San Francisco or New York or any place like that?
So this is where it's impossible for me to say who's correct, because one, Airbnb refuses to give completely transparent data on that issue. So there's actually no way for anyone to know. And both the Airbnb and the lodging industry have paid for studies to prove their points of view. One of the funny things about what's going on with the AHLA is that they're actually just doing a lot of the same things that Airbnb is doing and has been doing all along. And the AHLA was just a little bit slower to it and not as good at it, frankly. But yeah, so both sides have now paid different researchers, whether it's Penn State or others, to come out with reports that support their point of view. I think the funniest one was Penn State, because the hotel lobby paid for a study by Penn State, and then Airbnb paid for somebody else to debunk the study. So it's like really hard to know who is telling the truth. I actually believe that both sides are correct. There are both types of people on the service. We just don't know the proportion.
Yeah, is there any element of this that is an industry? Like, there are parts of this that remind me of the kind of slow march to digital music distribution online, and the record industry kind of holding, grasping to, you know, the way it's always been. And instead of kind of hunkering down and forcing themselves to innovate in order to compete on the same playing field and realizing, like, times have changed, things have moved on. Is this a case of that, of an industry that's kind of opting for litigation and politics over kind of realizing that this is a new digital landscape and maybe they need to innovate a little bit more?
It's really apt. And I think another reason why it's apt is because so one of the reasons why the record companies didn't want to innovate and they couldn't get it together to deal with digital music is because they were competing with one another. So Sony didn't want to cut some deal where suddenly Warner would own streaming music or have more streaming music, and the services themselves couldn't create their own streaming platforms because then they wouldn't be able to offer a full catalog of music because some artists wouldn't be on their labels. And they didn't want to form an alliance with one another because then they weren't sure how they would split up the profits. So that internal angst kept them from being innovative, and you'll see something similar with the hotels. Would it make sense for, you know, the Marriotts and Hiltons of the world to get together and create an online reservation platform? Of course, they've already been killed by the Expedias of the world and the Orbitzes of the world, which is actually another part of their lobbying plan. They also want to start working hard to rein in those online travel agents as well. But their internal competition will keep them from effectively doing that. So you're right. They're really just putting off the inevitable, and they're spending a lot of money to do it.
Your former colleague, Brad Stone, at Bloomberg wrote The Upstarts, which is about Uber and Airbnb and a comparison of their similarities, but also their differences. Airbnb is sort of a kinder, gentler. They went about things in a kinder, gentler way. And he paints this picture of Airbnb as sort of a scapegoat for what he calls San Francisco's poorly articulated rage. So it was this sort of idea that, you know, San Francisco is changing and who are we going to blame? What do you think about that?
I think that there's some truth in that, that so like with the Google buses, there's a way in which people see tech wealth and technology companies changing their world and they don't like it. But I will say that Airbnb is a company that's uniquely good at painting itself as this friendly Labrador retriever of a company, and they just really want to do good, and Brian Chesky's just a super nice guy. And while there is some truth to that, of course, you know, they're also an enormous company valued at $30 billion with tons of employees, a gajillion listings around the world, and their main motive is to make money. So I don't think that we can think of Airbnb as this friendly, wonderful, warm company and hotel companies as these really mean corporate, like, Goliaths, because Airbnb is valued privately at a price point that exceeds any major hotel company except for Marriott. So they are actually, in terms of market value, they are the Leviathan.
Wow. Yeah. And such a newcomer to the game. Do you think going public could help them in face all the challenges they're kind of facing right now?
Well, it's hard because part of their issue is they need to clean up a lot of their regulatory issues before they can go public, because shareholders don't want the uncertainty of an enormous revenue loss in New York City or San Francisco because the laws changed completely. I actually think they're pretty much there. I mean, the hotel industry is going to continue to make trouble for them and continue to make that hard, but I don't think it will make it impossible. I think that what will change when Airbnb goes public is it will probably be harder for them to come across as like touchy, feely, just nice guys, because they were going to be on these quarterly earnings calls every 3 months talking about how much money they're making, talking about their legal issues in very sort of, stark financial terms. It kind of reminds me of Google or Facebook before both those companies went public. Google was do no harm. We're so great. We're so fuzzy. We have this like candy colored logo, and Facebook was, we want to connect the world and we just believe in like love and human kindness. Well, you know what? Both of them are advertising companies now. Mm-hmm. And that's how we talk about them. And I don't think anybody thinks about Google as do no harm anymore. I certainly don't think anybody thinks of Facebook as like this, all we do is connect the world because we're just so lovely company.
Yeah, you go public and the march is on. People, you're super accountable and you got to keep moving, and you're accountable to everybody else. So, Katie Benner, New York Times, really appreciate you taking time tonight to talk to us about this really great stuff. Tell people where they can follow all your work online.
Sure. My Twitter handle is KT Benner, K like Kevin, T like Tom, B like Boy, E-N-N-E-R. And you can go to newyorktimes.com to read all of the awesome tech coverage that me and my colleagues do.
Awesome.
It's great.
Right on. Awesome. We catch it every day, and we appreciate you taking time today. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks, Katie.
Have a good night.
We got some feedback. Scott Remnick wrote in regarding Friday's show about how the Nintendo Switch sold fewer units in the U.S. than the Switch version of the latest Zelda game, Breath of the Wild. Scott writes, one thing a lot of places are overlooking is the fact that the game is available, but the console is not. So a lot of people, like myself, bought the game first while I knew I could get it. On top of that, Amazon Prime gives a big incentive to pre-order games by giving it a 20% discount. And it's not inconceivable that 20,000 users did exactly that. It's what I did, along with Mario Kart. I had the torture of staring at games on my shelf I couldn't play for several weeks before I was lucky enough to finally score a Switch. So a lot of people also wrote in to tell us to say, hey, you maybe there were more Breath of the Wild sold because they're also counting the Wii U. And of course they weren't counting the Wii U.
Right, that was separate.
Wii U. That stat was purely people who had bought Breath of the Wild for the Switch, and that number was higher. But that makes sense. What Scott's saying, that
sure,
you just bought it. I think also people were probably buying two just to sell one on eBay or something like
potentially
that.
Potentially. And also, never mind. I thought our technical director, Brian Burnett, was actually working with the show. Instead, he's playing Breath of the Wild on his Switch. Mm-hmm. He has one. So if you were wondering where your Switch was because you couldn't get one, our technical director has it. And actually, I heard from someone else on Twitter who said imports, somebody outside of the country, outside of the areas where the Switch is actually available, buying it because it's easy to import for when they get it there as well. So apparently there are a number of reasons why that might happen. It's still just kind of strange to me, but there you go. TNT's fan of the day is Gromit on Twitter. Is that your real name, Gromit? Who says, this is how I watch TNT news on my Daydream VR. So Gromit puts on Daydream and watches us in virtual reality. I mean, it's a flat image. I'm guessing it. We need to work on that. We need to get a 3D version of this set.
Right.
For Daydream.
Or just any, like, it doesn't have to be this set. We should make us, like, in the zoo or Hawaii or the ocean.
Except if we're in Hawaii, we're actually in Hawaii, right? It's not like a fake 3D, like generated here in the studio. If we're actually going to do 3D episodes with a Hawaii backdrop, I think that means that TWiT needs to go to Hawaii.
Right. Yeah. So we have a good base to work with to create the VR.
Get a nice base tan and then work on that tan. Mm-hmm. Anyways, show us. Oh, it's almost perfect. Like we're there. Weird. Brian, you make miracles happen, obviously. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT, preferably from a beach in Hawaii. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. It's spoiled! And we're going to find it.
Now, in case you still believe getting into a driverless car is terrifying, Bloomberg News wants to assure you that there's nothing to worry about because autonomous cars are learning from Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, nothing to worry about.
GTA 5 is just one of the simulation platforms researchers are using to teach driverless cars because simulations can run all day and all night, whereas real self-driving test cars have to deal with those pesky regulations while they're learning to drive. And if Ohio 8-year-olds are to be believed, it's also pretty easy to learn how to drive on YouTube, so they could just use that.
That's my skeptical voice.
They tweaked it, and it's German scientists working with Intel Labs, and they're just feeding it all kinds of information.
I guess so. But how does that translate into real world? Like, I feel like game rules, game physics, scenarios, all that stuff can't match closely, but I guess it can. I guess games are more and more realistic. They say that they do, so I guess I should trust them. But Grand Theft Auto 5 has 262 vehicles, 1,000 unpredictable pedestrians and animals, 14 weather conditions, and then, you know, bridges, signals, tunnels, intersections, the whole lot. So I guess technically that all the stuff is there, but how close does that translate? Like, if an AI is trained in Grand Theft Auto and then we put it on the roads, should we be worried?
Is it going to expect to see prostitutes everywhere or something?
Yeah, like what happens there? I don't understand. Like, this isn't reality, or is it?
Well, it's highly specific scenarios. They're feeding it everything. So you might see this. Someone might see this scenario.
Is he shooting a car? Like, actually shooting a car out of a gun?
That's one scenario.
Car gun mod. It's totally realistic. This is just like real life.
That is really cool, actually.
You've never been shot a gun? You've never shot a car out of a gun before?
That is really interesting. No, I've never done that. Not in my day-to-day life.
Then you have never lived.
Apparently. I actually want to do that now. Burke says Grand Theft Auto 5 is reality. So wait a minute. Is this reality or is it the other way around? We think that we're playing a game when we're playing GTA 5, but it's actually playing us. That's scary. Mm-hmm. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter, @TechNewsTodayTV.
So listen, we get our stories from all kinds of places. We go all over the web. But one place that we check, Jason and I check, is the TNT subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. We look at the stories. We up them. We down them. Is that the right verb you call
it? Yep. We upvote, downvote.
Upvote, downvote.
I never downvote anything in the TNT subreddit, to be honest, but I definitely
upvote. There was something weird there this morning, which I don't think was tech news. I downvoted it.
Oh, yeah, I would tech news.
It was.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I think it was there purposely to mess with us, but I don't know. I could have just not understood it. I downvoted that. Okay. But so come and join the community, and we would love to have you. Also, you can subscribe, so you are the very first person to get the show. You will be the first person. Find all the ways to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And if you would like to tweet at me, I would especially like to know if there's like a kind, gentle Grand Theft Auto, like maybe with unicorns, rainbows, something like that. Tweet that at me, at Megan Maroney.
A G-rated Grand Theft Auto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let us know.
Not Disney, but just, you know, clouds, fluffy things. I don't know.
Grand something I would Disney like. Auto.
Monkeys. Okay. I like no guns, just unicorns, monkeys. Yeah.
Definitely lots of unicorns and rainbows. I'm @JasonHowell on Twitter. I want to hear about all that stuff. If you're sending that to Megan, please at me as well. I appreciate it. Thanks to our technical director and today's editor, Brian Burnett. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio and occasional Burke chats. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.